Thank you, Charlie. Thank you, Sam, for leading us in those wonderful songs. I really have appreciated the prayers that have been led today. You guys, when you pray, you can tell it's coming from the heart, and I greatly appreciate that very much. We're going to be in Ecclesiastes chapter 2 tonight, so I hope you have a Bible with you. As we're turning there, I'll tell you a little bit of something about me as we get to know each other. I love music. Now, I want to be very clear. I am not a musician. My daughters, Sarah, who's here with me tonight, and Kate, who has been away on a retreat this weekend, they are musicians. They can play anything you put in front of them, which just blows my mind because I can't even think musically. But I love music. I love listening to music. I love experiencing music. I just, as an example, haven't had a whole lot of concerts since COVID started. But if you look at 2019, I went to 55 concerts. I love music. I love live music. And Nashville's a great place to live to love live music. I love listening to music. I still listen to music on vinyl records. You may not know this, but even most music that comes out, new music, comes out on vinyl records still today. There's something I like about, you know, having the record and putting it on the turntable and going through the liner notes and all that. I just love that. So park that for just a minute. So I've got a friend of mine that is a dear friend, probably my closest friend other than my wife, that he's a brother in Christ. He's a member at Bellevue, and he and I run together almost every day. I haven't looked at this in a while, but the last time I paid any attention, I think we had run something like 3,000 or 4,000 miles together. So when I say we run together a lot, it's a lot, okay? So obviously, if we're spending that much time running together, we have a lot of conversations. There's a lot of time to fill, you know? And inevitably, he has to listen to me babble on about whatever music I'm listening to or whatever. And he indulges me with that. But he made a comment to me one time that I thought was very interesting. He said, have you ever noticed how sometimes in secular music, and he was very emphatic about the secular and about specifically from an artist that is clearly not a Christian. Have you ever noticed how sometimes truth seeps in there? And he says, I wonder how it gets there. Because sometimes you'll be listening to a song and it's clearly not a Christian. It's clearly from a secular viewpoint. But sometimes there's just, you know, and he goes, how did they get introduced to that truth, you know, that they're singing about? Even though they clearly don't know Jesus, they're introduced to that truth. And it made me think about I mentioned Romans this morning several times, but in Romans chapter 2, very briefly, you don't have to go there, just let me read this. But in Romans 2, Paul's still talking about the Gentile world. He's been talking about them in chapter 1. And in chapter 2, he makes a comment that there are some, you know, Gentiles who, even though they don't know the law, they follow the law. And he says, you know, they show that the work of the law is written on their hearts, while their conscience also bears witness, and their conflicting thoughts accuse or even excuse them. And just, again, made me think about, you know, how those who are not Christians, those who are not seeking Jesus, but still, you know, it's written on their hearts whether they know it or not. So all that is a setup for this. I had bought a record from a band that I was really looking forward to their new record. And sometimes when I'm really looking forward to a new record, what I will do is I've got a room where I've got all my records, and I close the door and I put the record on, and if the record comes with lyrics, I'll sit down and I'll just by myself, I'll listen to it and I'll go through the words as they're singing. And in this case, there was a song. There was a song that was called "Didn't Fix Me," and I started going through the lyrics as I was listening to the song, and I'm going, "This feels like the same message that we read about in Ecclesiastes." And I was thinking about my friend, you know, making the comment about how do these truths slip into this, and I will tell you, I'm not giving you the name of the band. I'm not telling you who it is because I don't want to endorse them, because I'm not here to promote, you know, any person or group. And even if you were to happen to find this song, you go, hey, there's some lyrics in here that aren't consistent with. I'm not saying it's a Christian message. I'm saying that there's some truth sprinkled into it. But there's some things that I noticed about this song. What he's doing is he's talking about all these things that he has pursued in life and what the conclusion to all those pursuits were. And just a few kind of things from the song. He says, I went to see essentially a self-help guru. You know, the world might say, well, if you're not happy, go see a self-help guru or find you a self-help book or something like that. And he talks about going to this self-help guru, and in the end he says, but it didn't fix me. And then he says, I started volunteering with a local charity. So you might think, well, I'm not happy, so if I go volunteer, that'll make me happy. And he talks about in the lyrics, you know, all the good that they cleaned up the neighborhood, they picked up trash. But he says, it didn't fix me like I thought it would. And he says, then I got the book that you recommended that I read. And I understand why you told me to get the book. I understand what it was about me that you thought I needed to read. But he gets to the end, he says, it didn't fix me. And then kind of thinking about, he's a musician. He says, I finally got a nomination for an award that I don't need. And talk about all the people that he thanks when he won the award. And at the end he says, but it didn't fix me. And then finally, and this is the one that really jumped out to me. He says, I finally found someone that loves me. And he talks about getting married to that person. But he gets to the end and he says, it still didn't fix me. That night after I had listened to that song, we were having dinner as a family, and I just brought it up. I brought up the lyrics. And without me even prompting, my oldest daughter, Kate, again, who's not here tonight, she said, just one word, she said, Ecclesiastes. And the reason why is because she had been sitting in a class that I had been teaching on Ecclesiastes, and she said, that's the same message that you talk about, you know, coming from Ecclesiastes. And I said, that's exactly what I thought of. You know, as growing up, I don't ever remember a lot of sermons being preached from Ecclesiastes. I mean, maybe they were and I just wasn't paying attention. I don't know. But I don't remember a lot of sermons coming from Ecclesiastes. I certainly don't remember sitting through a class on Ecclesiastes. But as I have gotten older, it has become one of my favorite books in the Bible. And we can talk about all the reasons why on another occasion. But there's the passage that I want to look at tonight in Ecclesiastes chapter 2 really, really is an important passage to me, because I think it gets at the heart, well, I know it gets at the heart of something that is a constant struggle for me. And I think it's something that many of us, whether we recognize it or not, that many of us struggle with. And it's the same idea that's presented in this song. And that is that, you know, all of us, I could go around the room and say, okay, what do you want out of life? And I'd probably get answers like, you know, I want to be happy, I want to be content, I want to feel loved, I want to be successful, whatever it is. You know, we all have, you know, something that we really want out of life. But then if I said, how do we get that? There'd be a lot of different ideas about how we get that, especially if I were to go outside of the church and ask the people in the world, well, how do we get happiness? How do we get contentment? How do we, you know, feel loved? Whatever it is. You know, how do we do that? And the world is giving us, you know, is surrounding us, is telling us how we achieve those things, like it is something that we can achieve, and then that's going to fix us. The message of Ecclesiastes is very different than that. And I look at it almost as the entire book is like a grand experiment that the author went on, where he went down all these avenues looking what pursuit can I go after that the end result is going to be that I'm happy, that I'm fulfilled, that I'm content, okay? And one of those occasions is in chapter 2, where he goes on what I think is like a great experiment, where he says, I'm going to conduct this experiment and see what happens on the other end, okay? Almost like this song that we just kind of talked through. But go with me to chapter 2. If you're taking notes, I want you to write down this word, the word test. The word test. The writer says in verse 1, he says, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself.
Now, again, I think this echoes what we hear from the world, and really what Satan is telling us through the world, that, you know, happiness can be, happiness, contentment, fulfillment, success, love, whatever it is something that can be achieved if we just have the right circumstance. We can just manipulate our circumstances in such a way that the end result will be we're happy. Okay? And so what the writer is saying is, I decided I'm going to test this out. I'm going to test myself with pleasure, and I'm going to see what happens. And again, I think many of us do the very same thing subconsciously. And those of you that are younger, I want you to hear this, because this is a trap I have fallen into a lot in my life, of where we play this game of, well, I would be happy if I just had, fill in the blank, if I had more money, if I had a better job, if I had, you know, more friends or a bigger family, or I got married or whatever it is. It can be full of good things, but then I would be happy, right? Think the happiness is just one more thing that I can get, and I'm gonna be there, right? That's what the world is telling us. That's what Satan is telling us, that if, again, just one more thing, if I do that, then I'm going to be happy. Then I'm going to be happy. We conduct that test subconsciously, I think, all the time. At least I know I do. And with a lot of those things that we say, if we just had this, there's nothing wrong with those things. A lot of those things, there are some of them that are wrong, but some of them are not. Like, you know, thinking that getting married is going to make us happy. Well, there's nothing wrong with marriage. Marriage is an incredible thing. It's a wonderful blessing from God. But is marriage something that we do that once we've done it, boom, we're happy? That makes us happy? That the end result of getting married is that we're going to be happy? You know, sometimes we think, well, if I just had children, that's going to solve all my problems. I'm going to be happy. Having children is the most incredible blessing I can think of in life. You know, people try to tell you before you have children what an incredible experience it is to have children, and you can't explain it. It's so incredible, right? You can't explain it. But is having children flip a switch and all of a sudden now I wasn't happy before and now I am? Now I'm content? You know, is that the end result of having children? Again, great things, but we also look at, you know, other things. If I had a better house, if I could travel more, if I had more money, or if I won the lottery, or, you know, whatever it is, then now those things are going to make us happy. And so, again, this writer, who I believe to be Solomon, by the way, I know that's controversial today, but I believe it's Solomon, is saying the same thing that I think we do to ourselves subconsciously. I'm going to test myself with pleasure. So the first thing is test. But then I'm going to skip over the second part of verse 1 and all of verse 2, because he goes ahead and gives you the conclusion of the experiment up front. We're going to come back to that later. The second thing I want you to write down as we go down to verse, let's go ahead and read verse 3, and then we'll talk about the second point. He says, I search with my heart, verse 3, I search with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. Again, he says, I'm going to test myself with the pleasurable things, with the good things of life. Now, go down to verse 4. And I want you to, if you're taking notes, I want you to write down this word. And that's the word take. Okay? So he first says, I'm going to test myself. And then he says, okay, I'm going to take everything that I can take. Everything that I can set my eyes on, I'm going to take it and bring it to me. Okay, so listen to this. He said, verse 4, I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards for myself. I made myself gardens and parks and planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made myself pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I had also great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, and many concubines, the delight of the sons of man. So I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem, and also my wisdom remained with me. What does that mean? I knew what I was doing the whole time. I understood what I was doing. He says, and whatever, pay attention to verse 10. He says, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil. And this was my reward for all my toil. Now, we'll talk about the conclusion in just a minute. But what can we infer from the fact that he did and he acquired so many things? That not one of those things was enough, right? There was not one of those things that finally he reached a point where he was like, okay, done, I'm happy, I'm content, I'm successful, I'm fulfilled, whatever it is. So he kept doing, he kept acquiring, he kept surrounding himself with things. Nothing was enough. It was never enough. He kept having to take and take and take and take. And when we play that little experiment with ourselves, again, subconsciously, of I'm not happy, for whatever reason, I'm not happy. If I just had a better job, a bigger house, a better car, you know, more kids, whatever it is, what happens when if we happen to get a bigger house or a different job or whatever? Then we're in that spot. Then what? We need something else, right? We need more. We need more. We keep trying to fill ourselves with things of this world and go, I gotta have more. I gotta have more. I gotta have more. And this, as I was thinking about that, I thought, well, that brings to my mind another song. Another song from another secular artist who is clearly not a Christian. That is about a fictitious situation about a young man who is in some kind of an establishment. When in walks the old-time movie star, Rita Hayworth, okay? Boys and girls, old-time movie star, not your generation, not even my generation, okay? But Rita Hayworth, okay? And this young man is you know, starstruck by Rita Hayworth, who's walked in and is in the same room as him. And he says, I was sitting there in a comfortable chair. First of all, before she ever comes in, he says, I was sitting in a comfortable chair, and that was all that I needed. So what is he saying? I'm content. I'm sitting in a comfortable chair. That's all I need. I'm content. And then he says, well, Rita Hayworth comes in. He says, oh, well, just seeing her is all that I need. And then it says, I just had to get close to her, and then that would be all that I needed. And then he says, I just need an autograph, and then that's all I would need. And then he says, I started to walk away because I got the autograph. And he says, oh, I forgot to get a picture. And if I got the picture, then that would be all that I needed. And then finally she leaves. And he gets mad. And he says, oh, but I just need a kiss on the cheek. That would be all that I needed. But he gets mad because she leaves. And he says, but she didn't even care that I was even there. What a horrible feeling. And again, there's truth in that from someone who I don't think knows what truth is. That we go looking for happiness and contentment and fulfillment in the things of this life, and there's no end, right? None of it fixes us. None of it brings those things that we're looking for. And so we continue to, the world says, well, keep taking, keep taking, keep taking. And eventually you're going to be happy. Eventually you're going to make your circumstances in such that you're going to be happy. You're going to be there. So let's go back to revisit what the writer, what Solomon said that he did. He says, just listing them out. He says, here are the things that I did that I surrounded myself. He says, I made great works, built things. I built houses. I planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted them all kinds of trees. Made pools from which to water the forest of growing trees. Bought male and female slaves. He had people that did work for him, that were his slaves. He says, I had great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I gathered silver and gold, treasure of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, many concubines, the delight of the sons of men. And he concludes it by saying, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. And the message is there's never going to be enough if we're looking for happiness and contentment and fulfillment in the wrong places. We're never going to acquire enough or change our circumstances enough where we can go, now I'm happy. Now it has fixed me. Now I'm good. We're never going to do that. We're never going, even with the incredible things in life, even with things like marriage and family and children, if we think that those are the things that are going to cause us to be happy, we're still going to need more. We're still going to want more. None of those things are going to satisfy us. The third thing that I want you to write down is the word truth. And that is the truth of the conclusion to this experiment. And for that, let's go back to the second part of verse 1 and verse 2, and then we'll go down to verse 11. So Solomon says, but behold, talking about this test, he says, behold, this also was vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of pleasure, what use is it? When he says vanity, the word that's translated vanity is literally the word that means a vapor, a breath. It means there's no substance to it. He says, what was the conclusion to this experiment? Nothing. It did nothing to change, you know, my happiness, my fulfillment, my success, my contentment. It did nothing. It was completely empty. And so will it be for any of us who pursue happiness in the wrong place. The pursuit is empty. It doesn't bring happiness. It doesn't bring contentment. Go down to verse 11. He restates the conclusion at the end. He says, then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had expended in doing it. And behold, all was vanity and a striving after wind. There was nothing to be gained under the sun. Now, there's two different ways you can look at this. And I have been blessed to be able to teach Ecclesiastes probably half a dozen times in my adult life. I love the book. But I inevitably, if I announce, hey, I'm going to, you know, next quarter we're going to cover Ecclesiastes, I'll inevitably have somebody come up to me before the class starts and go, I hate that book. I hate it. And I'll go, well, why? Well, it's so depressing. He just talks about how everything is meaningless. It's all vanity. It's all worthless. And it's so depressing. Well, that's one option. That's one way to look at it. I choose to look at it the opposite way. Because I look at it as almost like a parent talking to their children about the mistakes that they've made. And why do we do that as parents? Because we don't want our children to do the same things we did, right? We don't want them to fall into the same traps. I mean, I can think of a very specific example with my parents that I am grateful for. Before I went to college, they sat me down and told me, you know, a lot of things, but one thing specifically I remember was, hey, as soon as you get to college, you're going to start getting offers like every day for credit cards. And if you buy into this, you're going to rack up a whole bunch of credit card debt and you're going to be paying it off the rest of your life. Okay, I was like, okay, great. Well, guess what? I sure did. I started getting all those offers and I was able to go, hey, they warned me about this. I'm going to avoid it. And I am grateful that they did that. I mean, it's something so simple, but I'm so grateful for that. I look at this the same way of him going, look, I've tried this. I've tried to make myself happy by getting a bunch of stuff, by even having slaves and singers and land and buildings and gardens and money. And let me tell you, it didn't work. It didn't work. And so I look at it as this should be a release to go, I don't have to manipulate my circumstances to find those things. That's not where it is. That's not where happiness is, but that's the lie I hear every day. That's the lie I hear, you know, whispering from the world, whispering from Satan, telling me, oh, just get more stuff. Just have more things, have a better job, whatever. Then you're going to be happy. But I can read this and go, no, I know that's not the case. I know that's not the case. So there has to be another way, right? If that's not the place where we look and we find happiness, then it has to be somewhere else. I mentioned this last week in talking about, you know, I intended for this to be a follow-up to last week, you know, about, again, back to the bread of life discussion that Jesus has with the crowd at Capernaum, where, you know, so easy for us to try to fill up our lives with the wrong things. And when those things get taken away, like during COVID, for us to feel empty, for us to feel like we're missing something because we've been filling our life up with something else. And I don't say that as I'm judging you. I say that as I did the same thing. It's easy to go, well, how come I can't go to restaurants and movies and concerts? And, you know, those are the things that make me happy. That's the lie that the world is telling me. But happiness has to be somewhere else. There has to be something else that I can fill my life up with. There has to, and that can be, again, can be a release to go, you know what? It's not on me to make myself happy. It's not something that there's a formula that I'm going to complete, and at the end of that formula, boom, I'm happy. And if we figure that out, all those good things that we talked about, you know, where we look for happiness, like marriage and children and family, think about how much better those relationships can be when we don't put the burden on them to say, you know, to our spouse, subconsciously to our spouse, I'm depending on you to make me happy. Or to our children, I'm depending on you to make me happy. Think about how much better those relationships can be when we understand that happiness is something entirely different than looking for something to make me happy. I want to go back to something that I mentioned last week about the, you know, again, filling up, being filled up with Jesus. With Paul, in Philippians chapter 4, and we'll just summarize this week, but where he said, I've learned in every situation that I can be content. Paul doesn't say, I can be content because I can change my circumstances, because I can make things better, you know, by, you know, doing some miracle. No, he says, I've learned to be content in every situation. But how does he say he did it? He does it through Jesus. The one thing in our life that doesn't change. You know, stock market goes up, stock market goes down. You know, calamities happen all the time. We're in the midst of all kinds of things going wrong. But what's the one thing that doesn't change? Jesus doesn't change. Jesus doesn't change. And how can we be content when we say, I'm taking this burden off of me and I'm putting it on him because he's already borne it. He's already lived it. He's already sacrificed himself. And if I've got my eye on that which does not change, then I know that whatever happens here, it's not going to affect my eternity, right? And God, through the difficult circumstances of our life, may be trying to teach us a lesson about what eternity is all about. And we may be looking at what we're going through as something that is just destroying everything about my life. No, it may be making me appreciate the eternity that I have in my future even more. And again, if we can have that release to say, I'm not looking for something to make me happy, the good things that God has blessed us with in life, we can enjoy them so much more. So much more when we don't put the burden on it to say, I need that to make me happy. Our marriages can be better. Our relationships with our children can be better. Our relationships with our brothers and sisters can be better. We can function better as a body when we're all united around the one thing that doesn't change, and that is God himself. This morning, I briefly referenced, you know, a couple of verses from Isaiah chapter 40. Again, Isaiah is speaking prophetically about future Babylonian captivity. And he's speaking as though it's happening in the moment that he's speaking, because he's speaking for God. He's a prophet. He's speaking for God. But he's talking about how the children of Israel the people of Judah are going to be complaining. And they're going to be saying things like, God, you know, can't you hear me? God, aren't you paying attention? You ever felt like that? Going through difficult things of life? You know, God, this isn't fair. God, why would you let this happen? God, why? And as I read this morning, he begins by reminding them about, first of all, how incredible God is. And one of those characteristics is that his understanding is unsearchable. But he reminds them first about how incredible God is. But he finishes in that passage by saying, but they who wait for the Lord. Now, what does it mean to wait for the Lord? I think it's a message of faith. We choose to put our faith in the constant, the one who paid the sin, the one who is going to be there forever, rather than putting it in anything in this life that's going to be here today and gone tomorrow. We put our faith in Him. We wait for the Lord. But what will happen to those who put their faith in the Lord? They shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. All of those things come because we serve a Savior who we look to as the focus of our life, not because we can make ourselves happy, we can make ourselves content, we can make ourselves successful, we can make ourselves feel loved, whatever it is. But there's power in taking that burden off of ourselves and putting it on Jesus and deciding that I'm going to follow Him and I can be content because no matter what happens to me in this life, even if my life ends tomorrow, I know that I have an eternity in home, at home in heaven with Him. If you're here tonight and you're struggling and we can pray for you, I can already tell that this is a praying church and I know that the church would love to pray for you. So if we can help you through some difficulty that you're going through in life, whatever it might be, if we'd love to pray with you and encourage you, then please come. If you're here tonight, and again, I imagine most of us in this room are Christians, but if you're here tonight and you've never made the decision to commit your life to Jesus Christ, then I encourage you to do that tonight. You know, there's no reason to wait. God is ready to meet you where you are, and if there's anything we can do for you, will you please come while we sing our invitation song?